Hey everyone, and welcome to the OT for Life podcast. Today, we're joined by Lauren Stanley, an occupational therapist from Houston, Texas, who works in pediatrics, but is also big into traveling. She ultimately decided to combine her two passions by creating Therapists Without Borders, an international nonprofit organization which is made up of occupational therapists, physical therapists, and speech-language pathologists who volunteer across the globe, assisting and supporting individuals with disabilities. We have an awesome chat about her experiences volunteering abroad, why she started her organization, as well as the risks and benefits of doing international volunteer work. If you have ever done any volunteering abroad, or you've even considered going, this is the episode for you. So hop on board and let's get to it. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Very busy. How are you?
I am good. Just finished up a long day today with a lot of clients, but other than that, I'm good. And I am so excited to have you on the show today. This episode is going to be really, really fun for me and hopefully for everybody else too, because we're going to be talking about one of my absolute favorite occupations. And I have a really good feeling that it's one of yours as well. And that occupation is travel.
Yes.
Just a little bit, right? And so, I guess we actually met in Cape Town when both of us were traveling earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And it was a really fun conference that we went to. It was the World Federation of Occupational Therapists Conference in Cape Town, South Africa. And What would you say your thoughts and your feelings about the conference were?
So leading up to the conference, I wasn't even sure if I was going to make it financially. We had an exhibition booth there that costs a lot of money. Anything we handed out, our marketing materials, and obviously just the flight and lodging, all that. And I put together a GoFundMe. I had a small food truck fundraiser here in Houston before I left, got enough fundraise to make it. And once I was there, I was just blown away by the support I was receiving from people, how well received this was, how many connections I made. And when I was there, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I almost didn't make it here. And leaving there, it was just invaluable. Completely invaluable experience, and I'll hopefully continue to be at future conferences for OT, PT, and speech as well after seeing just how valuable that was. So it was overwhelming for me. It was kind of like my official launch into the world, I felt like. But like at the end of the first day, I cried because I was just like so overwhelmed by, I didn't eat the whole day. I couldn't even go to the bathroom the whole day. Like I was so slammed at the booth by how many interested people there were. It just like blew me away and just confirmed everything that I'm doing and how much of a need there is for this and how much interest there is out there. So it really helped launch me. And ever since then, that whole time I was on fire. I got back home. I was just on fire about everything related to this, and it's really pushed me forward. And momentum has just been growing and growing since then.
Yeah, I feel like, I was going to ask, was this your first WFIT conference that you'd been to?
Yes. I've never even attended like one just for myself to be going, to a conference. Okay. So I like exhibited at my first conference.
Wow. So you haven't even done like AOTA or the state ones or anything like that?
Nope.
I haven't really,
my continuing education money that I get from my job has to go to different things. So I've never spent money on that on my own to try one of those. So this was the first one.
That is fascinating because it's really similar. So I've done the American Occupational Therapy Association conference for 5 years now. I've gone to my local state conference before, so I'm kind of familiar with how they go. Mm-hmm. And the WFIT conference was
very similar, but so different in the same vein. Having so many different countries there, practitioners from just all over the world. It was, I totally agree, it was completely overwhelming, but so inspiring the entire time. This was the first WFIT conference that I had been to, and definitely it will not be the last, because it was amazing, absolutely amazing. And I think that's really interesting that you said you cried after the first day. I felt the emotion as well. It was just like, it was crazy. I don't know if I can explain it in words. And it sounds like you actually had a lot of build up to it as well. It wasn't just book the flights and get there. It was all of the other stuff. I had a lot of work
to do before getting there. That was stressful, because I had a deadline. You know, I had to prepare all these materials in order to send in order to get printed, in order to get shipped to me in time to bring them there. And I have to send in all these details to the conference regarding the booth. And yeah, it was a lot of work to even prepare to go, aside from all the financial stuff.
Yeah.
But I made it, and it was great.
So yeah, I guess we actually, I met you at your booth, and we should talk a little bit about that so people understand what we're saying. And I was really, really excited and interested to get the chance to talk to you, because what you're doing is something that I've been doing kind of on my own for a while, and I've always had this thought in my head that this entity, this organization needs to, it needs to be alive. exists. And so when I was walking through the expo hall, I think it was on the very first day, and all of a sudden I turn around and I saw your booth, and I was like, no way. I have to go talk to this girl, because this is fantastic. So maybe you could just give us a little rundown on, you know, what you're working on and what the booth was all about.
Yeah. So like you said, how you've done, you know, several volunteer trips on your own in the past, I've been the same way. And, you know, for years along the way, have just struggled with finding a legitimate therapy organization to be going through. In the sense of, a lot of the volunteer opportunities that are out there are through these like global volunteer networks, and they are for-profit companies, and they charge you thousands of dollars to go to a place where it should cost hundreds, because they're keeping like 75% of your volunteer money for their own operating costs. And so, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like there's such expensive options out there to be volunteering as a therapist in developing countries, and it just enrages me.
I feel the same way, and that's kind of been one of the biggest barriers in terms of being able to do this volunteer work, is the funding for it. And in my experience, a lot of places will actually make you fundraise a lot of money, but I'm always a little unsure about where that money goes to. And I've heard of some of these medical missions and volunteer trips costing $5,000 to $10,000 just in order to go.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. So that's, I mean, that's, one whole side. Another huge, huge part in what I've struggled with and why I created this the way I'm creating it, is sustainability, because the trips that I have done, you know, they're not through a therapy-specific organization. So whoever I'm going through, which is just usually like this a local place, they don't know much about therapy, and there's no follow-up to, you know, what I've done after I've left. So like I've gotten home, and I'm like, you know, losing sleep, because I'm like, does what I just did, like, are they even listening to me? Are they carrying this over? Do they remember? Did I really make a difference long term? Probably not. And just really struggling with, there's no carryover or follow through. That's part of the reason I started this, to create some kind of plan of sustainability where we're documenting along the way. We have a system in place. Everyone follows the same procedures. One therapist is picking up after the last, and monitoring the caregivers on what they've been trained. So the affordability, the sustainability, and then the responsibility, which there's so many ethics that are involved in volunteering. And I think a lot of people just don't realize them, and making sure that you aren't doing more harm than good, making sure you're doing what that community needs, not just assuming based on your needs, and training local people so that they're involved with this to help ensure the sustainability, and even just finding responsible organizations in the first place. There just are so many, like, for example, orphanages that are scams and just pocket your money. So kind of having a system in place to vet the organizations you're going through, and just as a volunteer to understand what to be looking for, what are red flags, those kinds of things. So those are all struggles I've come across over the past several years in just doing my own. And there's a lack of an international, all-encompassing, neutral organization that, you know, focuses on responsibility, affordability, and sustainability. So just seeing the lack of an existence, you know, the past few years is what's made me like, okay, putting all these pieces together, this is my vision. Started this random travel blog Instagram account a year and a half ago, unintentionally related to this, and just started putting up some of the therapy trip pictures from the past, just because it's a part of what I do when I travel. And the response I got from those, of seeing how many people have responded, like you just said, like, I've looked for this. Why doesn't this exist? How is this not out there already? The amount of support I've received from so many people is what really made me be like, okay, I will be the one to fill in this hole. It's a huge undertaking, but I feel like if I build it, they will come. And that's what's been happening. And it's just been incredible.
I'm just so inspired by everything that you've said. And I kind of want to dive back into a few of these things that you were talking about. I was looking at your website the other day and kind of going back to the orphanages, and you were saying that a lot of them are scams. And I came across a little story that you were saying, and maybe you could explain it, that they would actually bring in the kids to make it look like they had, I don't know if it was just kids or kids with disabilities, but they were really just kind of making it a show, right?
Yeah. So basically what will start happening, because this is kind of turning into when you're really paying these huge corporate volunteer organizations that are for profit, it's becoming like a money-making industry. And so, you know, local places are kind of catching on to that and just taking advantage of people wanting to help. So, for example, I think that article you're talking about was in Nepal, where they estimated that 80% of orphanages in Nepal are scams. And how that happens is the owner, I'm doing air quotes, of the orphanage will go out into rural areas and tell the parents, if you send your kids with me, they'll get food, clothing, water, shelter, they'll be taken care of. And so parents will trust this person and send off their kids in hopes of them, the kids, having a better life. Owner takes kids with him to his air quote orphanage, and they're kind of just basically a little bit on display for tourists to come in and see their sad story and donate to the orphanage. And then the owner just basically keeps the money. So there's just a lot of things in making sure that you're really vetting where you're volunteering, where you're donating to, so that it's not just going in some guy's pockets and not going to cause.
I think that's such a valid point right there. And I have had so many people that when I tell them about all the volunteer work that I've done, that's one of the very first things that I tell them. If you're interested in this, make sure you do your research, because there are some really good organizations out there, and I've been a part of them, and they're fantastic, but there are also some that are not. And you really have to do your research, talk to people, figure out how it's run, where the funds are going, everything that you can think of to make sure that what you are investing your time and your money is going to a good, legit spot.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Since we're kind of talking about this, I'll kind of stay on the same line. I have, and I'm curious if you've kind of been faced with this at all. When you share what you do, this volunteer work, do you ever get people that kind of give you a negative reaction? I've had people say, well, you're just putting a Band-Aid on it. You're not actually helping. You're just doing something for yourself. Mm-hmm. Have you encountered that before?
Luckily, I haven't, surprisingly, with how many people are following this journey of mine. I anticipate that happening. I am educated about those things, and the whole reason I'm creating this the way I am is to prevent any of those issues for any of our volunteers. Right. In understanding that a huge part of this is educating and training local caregivers, local therapists to hopefully pass this on to them. We're not trying to take jobs, you know, from there. We're not trying to just put a Band-Aid on by, you know, going in for a little bit and then leaving and then nothing happens. We're trying to create, like I said, sustainable. So each person is picking up where the last one left off, while the people who stay there locally are continuing the care as well. Luckily, I haven't yet, but I do expect there to be haters. There's all. But I've been lucky so far. And I think hopefully because I'm approaching it in a way that it's not coming off as any of those negative things that I'm aware of that involves all the ethics behind this. When you mentioned our website, what's up there now is what my husband and I just like threw together with us just guessing at website design.
It looks great.
Well, I'm so fortunate because I have a website developer, a professional.
Who
volunteered to revamp everything. So within the next month, that's something we're working on. I'm sending her tons more content and it will look way more professional, have much more on there. I plan to have a whole kind of a note from the founder section regarding all these things we just talked about with the ethics and why we're creating this the way that we are.
Well, I think your website looks great, but I'm sure everything, and I speak for myself too, with my websites and everything, it can always, you know, improve and get better. And you really don't know what you need until that it kind of comes to you. And you're like, oh yeah, I probably should add that on there as well.
I'm so excited to have a much prettier and more informed and more professional site coming hopefully soon.
So I'd like to back up for a second and ask how did you get into, or how did you come up with the idea? What led you to your very first volunteer trip that you took?
I get this question a lot. And like, I feel like a lot of people kind of have like an aha moment or like some significant event that like leads them to do this, or like a calling or something like very like spiritual. And I don't have anything like that. I can remember in undergrad, before I, you know, was even in OT school, one night I was staring out my window, procrastinating, writing an essay on I don't even know what, but I was just like thinking about my future and just thought about like how I'd love to be doing therapy for like kids in need overseas one day. That's the first thing that I can remember, first time I can remember thinking about that. But again, there was no reason. It was just like kind of always in my mind as just like a part of me. I don't know. There's not really any big thing that happened. So it's just like, I've always just thought about it, imagined it. And then, you know, go through OT school, start working, start making money. That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
And then just, yeah, took my first volunteer trip.
Would you say that you were big into travel before that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I studied abroad in college. That's just, yeah. So it was just kind of a natural thing for me to combine things that I love, you know, it just like made sense. It's just like, oh, of course I'm going to do that. Like it just was a part of like me. I don't know.
Yeah. It just kind of organically developed where you're like, I like to travel and I like my job as an occupational therapist. And there are kids in need and adults. I know you specialize in pediatrics, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So there's kids in need, and how can I help with my skill set while I am out on the road? And I have that same thought. With the places, the first couple ones that you went on, had they ever had an OT there before?
Yeah, and so like our first two programs that we're, you know, doing with this, there's one in Kenya and one in India. There are local physiotherapists that work there. So we're building this kind of together with them and including them in how we're structuring this, as well as training them in other areas. So therapy is kind of defined differently in other countries. Like some countries don't even have OT. A lot of countries don't have speech therapists. And so sometimes the lines are a little blurred between, you know, just physiotherapy, meaning anything therapy related sometimes. Not really any other like American trained OTs I've been volunteering with. They've been just local physiotherapists basically.
Okay. And so you've pretty much gone by yourself.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I had a grad school friend with me.
Okay.
So we kind of went together and, you know, had our own kind of kids we were working with. But therapy wise, yeah.
Do you feel like the sites have been prepared to have an OT assist them when you've gone, especially with the first couple ones that you've done?
Yeah. India site has had a lot of different therapists come in and volunteer. And especially, you know, I kind of make sure beforehand that people know, you know, obviously, and that any therapist there knows so that they're not kind of put off by me being there. And usually when I get there too, I just follow their lead and just kind of, you know, show respect to learn their ways of how they do things. And just kind of some cultural aspects first before I'm just like jumping in.
Right. Yeah. I think this is important. And especially if people are thinking about going out and doing some volunteer work on their own or trying to find their own organizations, is kind of in the same line of doing your research so you know about the company or the organization, but also having them understand who you are, what occupational therapy is, what you specialize in, what your comfort level is, what you want to treat, what you want to work with. Because I've been on a couple different ones, and some of them have been set up. They knew exactly what I needed, and they put me into these places that were perfect, you know, perfectly designed of where I could best help and utilize my skills. But I've also been on other ones where they really didn't take the time to even kind of think about where an OT could work. And it was really hard for me because I wanted to be helping and there really wasn't, I wasn't put in the right spot. And everyone's busy when you're there, and it was really hard to kind of figure out where I needed to be. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like, you know, you've kind of already counteracted that and you're already doing your due diligence of letting people know, hey, I'm coming and this is what I can do.
Right.
But and just for, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just, and part of this, you know, I have a director of education and part of her job is, you know, training, you know, the local staff, caregivers, therapists there on the differences, you know, between OT, PT, speech, on different diagnoses, you know, who could use what, and then also having guidelines for who's going if you're a therapist, if you're a therapy assistant, or if you're a therapy student. So definitely having breakdowns for all those things I just mentioned that the site will be trained on as well, so that we can best match up, you know, there's objectives for each group of people kind of thing. So we can best match up, you know, which kids should be treated by who.
Yeah. That, I mean, as you're talking, I'm like, she's thought of everything. This is fantastic. And I'd love to talk a little bit about what to expect on, for somebody that has never done any sort of international volunteer work before. What would they, in your experience, what have you seen and dealt with? And what do you kind of foresee happening in the future as you start taking clinicians on?
I think when you first started to say what, you know, do you expect, I think having no expectations is important, because it's just like you have to be very open. You have to be very flexible, very low maintenance. Things are very different than how anything's done here in the States, especially therapy. And just kind of clearing away all expectations of what you're used to in terms of everything, the food you eat, the bed you sleep in, the bathroom you use, the therapy that you do, the therapeutic language that you use, everything kind of has to be washed away. And we're building this into like our volunteer orientation manual that we'll have to kind of turn those expectations into expect a hard bed to sleep in. Don't expect hot water all the time, you know, like those kinds of things. And just expect things to be very different. And understand that you will need to accept that and deal with that and, you know, just grow with it. Some parts are very hard to see and experience, and just kind of being aware that things like that will happen.
And things are going to be different.
Right.
Things are not going to be what you are used to at home.
Right.
And you might not have the materials. You might be seeing different diagnoses, or I feel like I've seen similar diagnoses, but much more severe cases of it that we might not necessarily be seeing in the States, or it's just not as common to be seeing in the States. And yeah, I think a big thing that even just being an OT is you have to have that flexibility and just showing up and knowing that things might, knowing that things probably won't go the way that you want them to go, but really rolling with it and adjusting so you can do the best work that you can do given the situation that you are in. Even if you're uncomfortable or unsure of really even your surroundings, just kind of getting out there and pushing through those challenges.
Right. And being aware that there's a lot that we can't change. We can't change, you know, a country's politics, which relate to how people with disabilities are treated or poverty, like all those things. There's so many things that that's not what we're here for. And realizing your boundaries and realizing that it's probably not the best thing for four kids with cerebral palsy to share one bed because positioning is awful, but there are no resources to have four single beds for them with, you know, propped up pillows or wedges between their legs or, you know, all these things that here we could probably do in the US, and just realizing that is probably something you might not be able to change. But you can change maybe when they're not in bed working on different positioning and at least training how to try and position them better if they are, you know, sharing a bed. So just kind of realizing there are some things you're not going to be able to change, but there are some things that you can, that daily added up over time with training the caregivers can make a difference.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just such a pivotal point of occupational therapy right there. Yes, we're all trained with this framework, but then being able to apply that across different cultures, different religions, different social economic status, you know, whatever resources that people have. I think that's just, that is OT right there.
It's a challenge.
Sums it up.
It's a challenge. But I mean, honestly, there are such little things that can be taught to the local caregivers that they don't know because they have no education or training in this, just such little things that over time will make a huge difference.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. What do you feel like other challenges are that you faced or maybe foresee facing kind of down the road?
With myself building the organization?
I was thinking more along the lines of just volunteering in general.
I was going to say if it was for my organization, my first thing is always funding, because that's a big question mark right now.
Right.
You know, fingers crossed. As for volunteers, there's definitely going to be a learning curve with this once we get started, because I do want this to be an international organization. And so having therapists from all different countries who have probably been trained differently could be an issue. But again, the way I'm trying to build this is very basic therapy, because again, who we're training, the education is so limited that this, what we're doing needs to be understood by a local caregiver whose English may not be very good and other international therapists that are coming in and carrying on the same care plan. So getting people to, you know, like when I write my goals, they're extremely specific here in the US, you know, like, and PT has goals like 5 degrees range of motion, you know, blah, 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 like extremely specific. And the goals that we'll be dealing with volunteering will be very basic. Like in 6 months, Johnny will sit independently. That's it. We're working on him sitting. Like, that's what he needs to do. That's what we're all going to focus on for 6 months and not break it down into a million different steps that caregivers will get confused on. Therapists whose, you know, primary language may not be English will get confused on. So having to adjust and simplify therapy so that we're all just working on general principles to help make a difference, so we can all be doing this together for the sustainability piece. Because if everyone's going and doing their own independent, you know, someone's doing kinesiotaping and then the next person comes in and treats something completely differently because they don't know how to kinesiotape, like, that's just not going to work. So kind of just getting back to the basics and very, very functional outcomes that we're all working towards.
Yeah, that seems like it would be really beneficial to just have it very basic, very simple, but also super impactful. Being mm-hmm. able to get that child to sit sounds easy, sounds simple, but if it's a kiddo that's never sat by themselves before, what a monumental thing to be able to get them to do that.
Right.
And really kind of leaving out all the other fluff that could kind of get interpreted in different ways.
Right.
Just really highlighting that function piece and accomplishing it. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Right. Any other challenges that you foresee?
I get the language barrier question a lot. I haven't found that to be an issue so far. In the sites that we're going to, there's, you know, the local caregivers or local therapists either speak English well enough, like I was just saying, to understand basics, or there are local staff there who are available for translation. And anyone that I assume is volunteering to go through us has enough English where they're able to understand the website and what they're volunteering for.
Right.
So I haven't had the language barrier be too much of an issue yet. That may come up. I don't know. That's one thing I'm wondering about that could be a potential issue down the road. And what's hard is I just have no idea what to expect when I open up applications. it's one thing to have a huge long list of people signed up as interested, which I have, but it's another thing of how many of those people are actually going to do this when it's available. Right. And preparing for that, that's just really hard to predict. So that's been kind of a challenge going through this when I've been writing goals for our, you know, 5-year plan and all this stuff, predicting growth like that and in how many places we can expand to based on, you know, how many people are interested in this and if this is working. That's kind of hard to do. And I feel like I won't know a lot of these answers until we're rolling and it's happening.
Right. And I mean, and even then it could change.
Right. Yeah. It's just very hard to predict any of this.
So what would you say, starting this organization, but also having your experience with the volunteer work, what has the volunteer work that you've done before and also kind of going through the process of setting up this organization, what impact has it had on your life?
Yeah, seeing that something better needs to exist to fill in all these holes and connect the significant need for therapy services abroad with the significant willingness of therapists to provide that.
Yeah, I've definitely had so many people reach out to me that are interested when I tell them about this kind of stuff. So I can only imagine how many people, as you are at WFIT and as you are talking to people in your daily life, how many people are like, yes, that is something that I really want to get involved with.
Right.
Do you feel like most of the people that have contacted you so far have done something like this or are complete newbies that want to do something?
That's hard to say. I probably, my guess would be most people would be new in the sense that the amount of messages I've received that have said things like, I've looked for years for something like this and all I've hit are dead ends. So I feel like there have been people who have been trying to find something like this for a long time and haven't found a good enough opportunity. I feel like that's probably more than 50% of the people who have contacted me. But I, you know, I have plenty of people who have said, you know, I've done something like this before and would love to continue. And what you're putting together sounds great.
So I'm going to put you on the spot with this question. Why?
Right.
I'm going to ask all the tough ones. Especially for somebody that's never done it. I'm kind of leaving the people that have already done it. They know a little bit, or maybe they've done a lot of it. They know what they're getting themselves into. But for somebody who's never done something like this, why should they? Why do you think they should?
Good question. I feel like there's a lot of answers. If your desire is to make a difference in, you know, someone else's life, which I feel like as therapists, that's what a lot of us desire. Going through an organization like this one that's checking all the boxes of the responsibility and the ethics and the sustainability will help you to make that more of a lasting difference in someone's life. And on the flip side, for me, I have felt burnout in like my job here. There's insurance battles. There's underappreciation from lots of different people, whether it's doctors, like I said, insurance companies, or even parents, or just burnout with like behavior kids, you know, kids who are like scratching out my contacts and like ripping off my jewelry. And then you go abroad and like, there's just, it's all relative. And just seeing the appreciation and need when people haven't been handed things, you know, to them their whole entire life, how much it's appreciated what you're doing for them, that it makes more of a difference than what you're doing at home that insurance doesn't believe matters, or doctors don't think that the kid will meet that goal because they don't trust you. And you know what I mean? Like, it's a lot more, you feel like you're just making a bigger difference sometimes one-on-one instead of the battles that sometimes we go through as a therapist here. And it just gives, in general, just perspective on a lot of things, how much you can get by with nothing, therapy-wise and just life-wise.
Yeah, that's it, that perspective piece. I know, so for me, I see all of my clients in their houses in California, in Los Angeles, where I work. And I will show up to their houses, and I have clients that aren't there, they cancel last minute, something like that. And this one story sticks out to me on one of my volunteer trips that I had done. I had a client that had a 10 a.m. appointment, and they left their village at 2 a.m. to travel 8 hours by cart. I don't think they were even in any sort of like car or anything. I believe it was, you know, some sort of like horse or donkey run cart to get to my appointment, in which they arrived on time. They were actually early.
Yeah.
In order to see me for an hour to then turn around and make the trek back.
Yeah.
And I just remember sitting there, and I didn't realize that until the local therapist that was there told me. And I just remember sitting down and I'm like, I just need a minute. This is.
Yeah. Like that makes me want to burst into tears. Like,
right. Yeah. And I was also a part of a larger medical team for that. And one of the doctors was telling me that there were some patients that traveled over 36 hours to get to some of the surgeries and some of the procedures that they needed. And yes, it's just, yeah. It's a different perspective.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And really just kind of changing your views, opening your eyes to so many different things that you may not get exposed to where you work, especially if you're in the States or any sort of westernized country, and kind of making you appreciate what you have, but then for me, motivating you to want to assist others that might not have it.
Yeah. And along those lines, when I was in Kenya, I mean, they just have nothing. And my second day there on the way to the orphanage on this like crazy loud rap music, jittery public bus I was on, I cried because I just think about the potential in, you know, all these kids and if they had the resources, what they could be, and how I just wish I could scoop them all up and like bring them back to the States and get them what they need. And that's just not right and not realistic. And not fair. And after being there for, you know, spending my time there, realizing, I mean, it's just all relative. Like, people who have everything aren't happy. It doesn't mean they're happy. You know, they still don't have certain things that they want, even though they, you know what I mean? And like, so everyone that I experienced there in Kenya at that orphanage was some of the happiest people I've ever met, because it's just all relative. And a lot of times when you don't even know what you're lacking, you don't even know. So like, you're just so happy with what you have, because that's what you know. And it's just really interesting to me to see that and how happy these people are with so little. And it just gives so much perspective.
That's so important, I think, to note, especially as a clinician, as a volunteer that's going to go and do something like this, is that you have other things to compare it to. And I like how you said that, you know, they don't really know. And so they're just happy with what they have.
Mm-hmm.
But here you have somebody coming in that knows what else is out there,
mm-hmm.
and really kind of keeping that emotionality in check of what can I do while I'm here and how can I promote it to continue while I'm, when I'm not here.
Right. It's like a fine line between offering our suggestions in a therapeutic professional sense of what could be beneficial, but at the same time, taking into consideration their needs and not just what we think they need. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I'm totally like, shaking my head, saying? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, she can't see that.
Yeah. So taking into account what they need, but also on our end of the therapy side, knowing more what they could need, you know, combining those two things.
Yeah, and just being adaptable given what you have while you're there. And I think I just kind of keep going back to this sustainability that mm-hmm. you mentioned earlier. And I think that's just so important, because if somebody comes in and wants some sort of material, some sort of equipment or something like that, in typical volunteer trips, you come in, you do your work, and you leave. And if you don't have it when you go, okay, maybe you can ship it there later, but most likely that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and who's going to train them on how to use it or
exactly.
whatever.
Exactly. And I'm just so encouraged that you've kind of had that forethought of, okay, we can start putting all these things into place, even if it doesn't happen right away, but we can get these materials, we can get these supplies and train everybody and educate them on how to use it. And really just promote the greater good of the entire orphanage or facility, wherever you are providing mm-hmm. the therapy. So I have a total random question for you yep. here. And I've been wanting to ask it the whole time because I'm so curious. But for anybody that has followed you on Instagram yet, I know that you love ice cream.
Yeah, I do.
So you have to tell us, what is your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Oh, man. I actually worked at an ice cream shop throughout high school and some summers during college, and literally ate it every day. And I constantly change the flavor I'm eating. But I feel like when I go out, I lean towards, it depends on the season too. See, now, like the other day, I had like espresso ice cream mixed with pumpkin because it's Ooh. Fall. But I feel like generally I lean towards fruity, I guess. Like okay. I love banana. I don't know. This is harder of a question than any of the other ones you've asked me. Because I'm like, right. well, other times I like will go straight for the like caramel. Or if they have like a floral one, like a lavender or a rose, that would be definitely my first one.
Okay.
That's definitely the hardest question you've asked me so far.
That's so funny. And I was actually going to start with that question, and then we kind of just segued into other things. So I'm like, oh, I'll just keep it on the back burner. I'll ask her later. Is there, because I know you've traveled to a lot of different cities, a lot of different countries. Is there an ice cream outside of the U.S. that stands out to you?
Yeah, I'd probably say Italy is my first instinct with the gelato. I mean, they have like a billion flavors of gelato, and it's literally everywhere you look. So you can just eat it every step of the way, every day.
Right. Breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Yeah. It's totally normal there. So.
Oh, yeah. For me, the ice cream that really stands out to me, and maybe it's because it was one that I had on my very first volunteer trip that I did, but it was in Ecuador.
Oh.
And it was, oh, my two favorites, I should say, were coconut and blackberry.
Mm.
And they are like, oh, they're so good. And I like
I want it
all the time.
Yeah, now I'm like really wanting
it. Yeah. So, oh yeah, I have one more question for you. Hopefully this one's not too hard, but if you only had one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
Independence.
I like it. Didn't even like hesitate on that one. That is amazing. And I feel like that could tie into the clients and having independence for themselves. Mm-hmm. But kind of tying it into our whole conversation that we've had today, the independence to treat as you want to treat without the guidelines of whoever it is, whether it's insurance or anything like that, that's weighing you down in terms of how long, what you could do.
I feel like also with caregivers, because the more independence, you know, your kid has, the more independence you as a caregiver has as well.
Right. And the family as an entire unit.
Right.
And also kind of the independence of the clinician going and being able to do something like this as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's such an overarching word that you used, and so perfect right there. So if anybody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about that?
You can get to everything through the Instagram. You can send a message through the Instagram, through Proper Jetiquette, or in the bio has the link. There's also, I think if you hit email on my bio, that'll send you to one of my emails, my Proper Jetiquette email. But if you click the link in my bio, that goes to our website for Therapists Without Borders. And on there's an email address under the Contact Us tab that will go right to me too. It's the info email address. You can also email lauren@twbinc.org. So there's lots of ways.
Perfect. I'm glad you threw that in there, because I was going to say, if you don't have Instagram, you could just go and Google Therapists Without Borders and you'll be able to find her.
Yeah. Make sure you put in Therapists Without Borders, Inc.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fantastic chat, and I'm so glad that we were able to take a break from, well, at least I'm not traveling. I should have asked, are you even traveling right now?
I got back yesterday.
Okay. I saw that you were somewhere like a day or two ago. I'm like, is she doing this on the road?
I'm home today.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that we were able to connect, and I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. 1, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 2, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. 3, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.